T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Wednesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the three-hour Cosmic Cocktail Party. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Albuquerque to Albany, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
Are they listening, DA? Everything we saying, DA, everything.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. We'll talk NBA playoffs this morning, as last night we had three more games in the books in the first round. We've also got the Marlins not caring much about having a no-hitter. We've got NFL draft action with Washington defensive lineman Elijah Qualls, who looks to be a draft pick of the first two rounds in the NFL, which comes up a week from tomorrow. And then, of course, the big news of the morning is Aaron Hernandez committing suicide in jail. We'll tackle that in full coming up here in about 15 minutes from now, the Aaron Hernandez story at 20 past the hour. As always, we love to get you guys here involved in the show. This is our first week in this time slot, taking it over from Tiki and Tierney. They did a great job the last couple of years. We are now trying to make sure we don't break everything in the house. It's a very, very nice house. We're just trying not to break all the fine china that they left for us, but more than likely, we're going to pawn it off for beer money.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. And on Twitter, DA on CBS. And become part of the Facebook fan page, won't you? It's fun for the entire family. Go to Facebook.com/TheDAShow and like the show page.
Yeah, get my timeline popping.
That's Facebook.com/TheDAShow and like the show page. All right, let's start with last night's Bulls and Celtics game because, well, after a game one loss at home in embarrassing fashion to the 8 seed, obviously the 1 seeded Celtics were going to come back with fury at home, split the series, get it to 1-1, seize momentum back, head back to Chicago. I mean, obviously, after the Celtics had lost in game one to the Bulls, they were going to rebound, play focused, play more physical, play better down the stretch, have more energy, have a little chip on their shoulder against a Bulls team that really embarrassed them a couple of nights ago. Oh, wait! The exact opposite happened. The Celtics acted like they couldn't be bothered to play in a game two. And the Bulls, an 8 seed, are the first 8 seed to take a 2-0 lead over the 1 since 1993, when the Lakers did it over the Suns. And that, I think, was like the Eldon Campbell, maybe Nick Van Exel Lakers days. I mean, not good days. Bad days. Real bad days. Been a long time is what I'm trying to tell you. It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
Rondo, the lob and the two-handed dunk by Cristiano Felicio. And the wheels are off the Celtics. Bulls in front. 102-86 with 6:01 left here in the fourth quarter. Wow.
We have to get ready to play great on Friday. That's what our focus has to be. We don't have any other choice. And that's what we said in the locker room, and that's it. We'll dissect the film. We'll go through it. We'll figure out what we didn't do well, and there will be quite a lot. And then go from there.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
Chuck Skwirsky on Bulls Radio. Brad Stevens following the loss. Look, I owe a big, fat apology to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Even if you're fat.
Because I said before the playoffs began, there was only one team of the East that was good enough, ready enough to knock off the Cavaliers, and that was the Celtics. And right now, the Celtics look like they should be the 8 seed. They were out-muscled again last night. They were out-physicaled again. Even when they climbed within a 9-point deficit in the fourth quarter, you had the Bulls go on a 14-4 run to pull away. The Celtics could never close the gap. The Bulls set the tempo and dominated the entire 48. And this is the 8 seed we're talking about. The one thing we did discuss after game one is that this is not the normal 1-8 matchup. The Bulls are better than an 8. The Celtics are worse than a 1. And strategically, X's and O's wise, what the Bulls do good, what the Bulls do well in terms of rebounding and playing in the post, the Celtics do not and have had a deficiency all season long. So on top of it, to add guys like Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo to the mix with Jimmy Butler, their star power for an 8 seed, and Rondo clearly taking revenge as a huge motivator and looking to step on the throats of his former team in his former house. All of that combines for this not being your normal 1-8, but my God, Celtic, stop embarrassing yourself. I mean, honestly, you're the 1 seed, and you just got worked over at home in the first 2 games. And in game 2, where you were supposed to rebound and play better, you played worse. Some of this, to be fair, may come down to the emotional devastation that Isaiah Thomas is playing with, and maybe that just has a cloud over that entire organization. But Isaiah went for 33 points in game one. He had 20 points last night in game two. I honestly just think this is a Celtics team that just wasn't ready for the bright lights of the playoffs right now, especially against a Bulls team that was more than ready to get into the playoffs and prove their mettle. Let me throw one more piece of this out there at you. The Cavs might have dodged a huge bullet by not being the 1 seed. I mean, let's face it, the Cavs have not looked like world beaters in their first 2 wins over Indiana. The Bulls, if they were taking on the Cavs, might very well be up 2-0 on the Cavs as well. I mean, again, not many 8 seeds have Rondo, Butler, and Dwayne Wade. That team should not have been 41-41 this season and slipping into the playoffs on the final day of the regular season. The Cavaliers were supposed to be the 1. The Cavaliers botched those last 2 games against the Hawks. They blew the 26-point lead in the fourth quarter. Then they sat LeBron for the final 2 regular season games and said, fine, we'll be the 2. I mean, the Celtics might get swept here. And then it wouldn't matter because the Cavs would once again be back to having home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. But remember, the Cavs also wouldn't get the Bulls in the second round either. The Bulls will go on to play the winner of the 4-5 matchup if Chicago gets out of the first round. So the Cavs might have done the best thing ever for themselves by losing the last 4 games of the regular season. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS if you want to weigh in. 855-212-4227. The other Eastern Conference playoff game last night, Raptors and Bucks, Dinosaurs and Deer. Game 2 go to the Dinosaurs in the 3-6 matchup. Let me tell you this. The Raptors did 1,000% better job in stymieing the Greek Freak's drives to the basket and his kind of free reign that he had in transition, getting to the rim and creating havoc underneath. They packed the paint. They forced him to be a jump shooter. He was still effective, but not as destructive. And in that game plan, then Toronto can keep pace. They also needed a big game from Kyle Lowry as well.
Shot clock at 5. Lowry works right. Step back, jumper in the air. Good! Lowry knocks it down. Timeout, Milwaukee. 104-100 Toronto. Lowry delivers the big shot.
Paul Jones, Raptors Radio. Lowry, I thought, sounded like a baby after game one, where he was saying, well, I mean, my guys are not making shots, but my teammates want me to be more aggressive, so I guess I'm going to have to take more shots. I just hated that tone, and I've never really been a big Kyle Lowry fan. I feel like he can be childish, and you have to continue to motivate him. But then even after game two, he's like, well, my teammates challenged me to be more aggressive. I think he was bent because the guys were saying, look, you're one of our leaders. You're one of our best players. You've got to be more in command of what's going on. And Lowry, I guess, resented that a little bit. But it stoked his fire enough to where he took enough shots last night to be a difference maker. But, I mean, you don't really want your leader of the team. People freaked out about Paul George the last couple of days. To me, Kyle Lowry going, well, I mean, I was trying to pass, but nobody's making the shot, so I guess I'm not going to pass anymore, was worse. But at least he delivered last night. So the Raptors get that to 1-1, and this is going to have to be their game plan because Giannis Antetokounmpo is so dominant. You've got to limit him when and while you can, and make other players on the team beat you, because he can obviously single-handedly destroy your game plan and destroy your series. And this is going to have to become the new game plan against the Bucks. Stack the paint, play him physical, don't give him free reign to the basket, make sure you get in front of him in transition, force him to be a jump shooter, and if he knocks down 15 jumpers, fine. But you'll take that over him delivering facials on you on a series-by-series basis. When we come back here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio, and a reminder, you can watch us on the live stream at watchda.com. We discuss Aaron Hernandez and the story of the morning as he's found dead in his prison cell. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Open now for brunch.
Hey, DA. Now I'm going to be listening to you in the morning on the way to work. I do like that. I like the fact that you're going to be by morning. Perez is a cracker.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later on to the show when we'll answer that question. If it's taking longer to stop, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts for the Spring Break Deals event. You can take advantage of O'Reilly's Do It Right rebate and get a $20 O'Reilly gift card by mail when you buy a set of Brake Best Select pads and a pair of rotors. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. The story of the day is Aaron Hernandez being found last night, early this morning, in his jail cell, having hanged himself with his bed sheets. I don't think it's a coincidence that today the New England Patriots are visiting the White House to accept their, well, to celebrate their Super Bowl championship. I don't think that's a coincidence. Aaron Hernandez was just acquitted of that double murder last week. That certainly could factor into the timing of this. But I don't think that this is a complete coincidence that on a day he watches his former teammates accept a championship or go to the White House and be part of national news and be celebratory, and I'm sure his inmates, cellmates, whatever, have been talking about his they know who he was, his former life, his former career. He would not have been part of this. He was not part of either of the championship teams. Obviously, this recent one, he was in jail. The previous one, he was not part of as well, the last couple of years, 2 years ago. He was on the one that lost the Giants in 2011, the second team that lost the Giants. But I think that if you're Aaron Hernandez and you're in jail, you hear about this all the time. Players that are incarcerated that obviously are understanding what their former teammates are celebrating as a unit and it affecting them psychologically and emotionally. Mercury Morris always talks about being in jail for drug possession and drug trade in the 80s and being so close to the Orange Bowl he could hear the cheers of Dolphins games and how that just drove him insane. Now, it drove him to clean his life up. It drove him to, when I get out, I've got to really do it right. But there's all types of stories of guys that know what's going on the outside of their former team and obviously have to sit in their own depression in the middle of incarceration and deal with that. Now, for Aaron Hernandez, obviously a nightmarish story and a nightmarish human being. But I do want to point out one thing. The fact is, the New England Patriots took a risk in drafting this guy, and it came back to haunt them. And I don't think that should ever be forgotten, because we want, in the NFL, the league and teams to make decisions on player conduct and choose the right kinds of guys, because it's easier to root for. No Patriots fan that bought an Aaron Hernandez jersey wants to learn that the guy is a murderer. He's a cold-blooded killer. No Patriots fan wants to cheer for a player to score a touchdown and then realize, oh, I was cheering for a guy that killed other human beings. And I know that there's fans out there that say, I don't care how bad the guy is, DA. I just want to win games. But for the most part, if we want a more comfortable fan experience, having players that aren't atrocious human beings is easier. Let me read to you a little draft nugget from ESPN.com on the day that Hernandez was drafted, April the 24th or April the 23rd, 2010. Patriots start day three with another tight end, with second-round draft choice Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez paired with veteran free agent Algie Crumpler. The position is now well-stocked. Hernandez looks to be more of a pure pass catcher. Hernandez was not projected to be available in the fourth round based on on-field production. He was the John Mackey Award winner, best tight end of the country. But at least one team told ESPNBoston.com that it moved him down its board because of off-field concerns. Bill Belichick has a strong relationship with Urban Meyer, and that tie-in was probably important to Belichick in making this pick. Let me tell you what Aaron Hernandez did at Florida, okay? On the field was great. As a junior, he won the John Mackey Award, the nation's best tight end. He led the team, and that was a great team, remember, at Florida. 68 catches, 900 yards, 5 touchdowns, first-team All-SEC, first-team All-American by the AP, first-team All-American by College Football News, first-team All-American to the Sporting News. He was big, he was fast, he was strong, he was productive for a great team in the best conference. And he dropped to the fourth round. Huh, that's weird, right? Well, when he was at Gainesville in 07, he got drunk at a restaurant, had to be escorted out because he wouldn't pay the bill. As he walked away, he came back and punched the guy that escorted him out, the employee of the restaurant, in the side of the head, rupturing his eardrum. Charged with felony battery. Later on in that year at Gainesville, Five shots were fired into a car that was waiting at a Gainesville stoplight having left a nightclub. Police identified the shooter, or at least those in the car identified the shooter to police, as Aaron Hernandez. Glass, who was the driver, Justin Glass, was shot in the arm. The passenger was shot in the back of the head and still suffers seizures as a result of the shooting. Hernandez invoked his right to counsel and refused to talk to police, and so no charges were filed at the time. So Aaron Hernandez got so drunk, got kicked out of a bar, came back, and punched the guy that kicked him out in the eardrum, rupturing his eardrum, and then was likely involved in a shooting at a stoplight in Gainesville. Patriots drafted him. He was the best tight end in the country, dropped to the fourth round. Patriots drafted him. And the Patriots had the best intel on what type of guy he was because Bill Belichick and Urban Meyer are best friends. Am I going to sit here and tell you that the Patriots knew they were drafting a murderer? No. Do I think that Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft, Bill Belichick knew the night of the murder of Odin Lloyd or these other double murders that Aaron Hernandez was involved and that he was going out? No, I don't think they had a tracking device on him. Do I know that they decided to sleep with dogs and get fleas? Yes. And that's why when I hear Kraft or Belichick go, oh, it's such a tragedy. It's just tragic. Just can't believe it. Never would have thought. Seemed like such a good guy. I mean, they lavished a $41 million contract extension on him after his rookie deal. I'm sorry, I don't buy that they thought he was a great guy. I think they knew they were taking a massive, massive personality chance. Massive. The best tight end in the country drops to the fourth round, and they've got inside information from his college coach. You think they thought he was a charity worker? You think they thought he was building homes for humanity? You think this was a guy that they were like, wow, we thought he went home and drank Gatorade and worked out all day. We had no idea. No, they knew he was part of a bad circle with a bad group of people. And so I'm sorry, I just find it totally disingenuous when Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots that always wants to make it like they're the best organization and they do things the right way and all of this. And Belichick says it's a tragedy, it's this, it's that with Aaron Hernandez, that they didn't know something was up because they drafted a guy with massive risk and massive baggage. Now, could he have had a face where he sits down with you and says all the right things? Sure. Could he have a part of him where all of the stuff you don't want to believe because he charms you? Sure. But be realistic. Look at the facts. The Patriots took a massive risk, massive, that nobody else was willing to take in the first four rounds and ended up having a murderer on the team. So I don't want to hear them say, boy, it's just a real tragedy. We just didn't know, you know, I just couldn't. Who could have thought? Well, 31 other teams thought. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, at least one Major League Baseball manager does not care about history. He just wants to save his pitcher's arm. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Sports talk was meant to be on an imaginary spaceship.
Shout out to my boy, Skinny Fat, Mraz. Love you. Follow both of you guys on Instagram.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember, you can stream us if your local affiliate doesn't carry us, or maybe you're outside of your normal listening area. It's all good. On your phone, it's easy. Just download one of the apps, the CBS Sports app, the TuneIn app, or the radio.com app. Plus, Apple Music streams us as well. And if you're in front of your computer, you can listen by going to our website, CBSSportsRadio.com, or you can watch the web stream, WatchDA.com. Interesting. So today the Patriots will visit the White House, but Tom Brady will not be part of the traveling party to attend to family issues. That's interesting because, I mean, Tom Brady seems to be or has seemed to be a supporter of Donald Trump, so you wouldn't think that him getting in the crosshairs politically was going to be that big a deal for him. But what do you think? Do we buy this, or is this him wanting to stay out of the fray and not be politicized and not be connected to the White House, a president, kind of not be thrown into the middle of the politics thing?
I think he's just trying to avoid all political problems whatsoever, since he kind of has been a Trump supporter. I mean, personal family problems is the perfect thing to say, because who's going to question you?
Yeah.
You know, I guess we are right now, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't think that just coincidentally he's made all four of the other White House trips, and now suddenly he doesn't, and he's been connected to a polarizing president, a polarizing administration. I don't think that randomly this just happened to be the one day out of the last 15 years, or at least at the last five Super Bowl trips, that he just can't make because of personal issues, because of family issues. I agree. I think he just wants to stay out of that, and he wants to not be brought into that discussion, because he's been brought into that discussion before and was obviously very uncomfortable discussing that discussion and that situation last year during the election when that popped up a million times.
You think it has anything to do with Aaron Hernandez whatsoever?
No, I don't know what that would connect to.
Well, maybe the fact that he knew that Aaron Hernandez was a bad guy. Maybe he's upset at Belichick and Kraft for, you know, drafting him. And today when they go to celebrate and, you know, everybody acts like the Patriots are great, he's sitting back going, well, look what happened here to Aaron Hernandez, and we had taken this guy knowing his problems.
So you think that Brady told Belichick and Kraft, get rid of this guy, he's a bad dude?
Yeah, or maybe didn't want him to begin with and said, we don't need this guy. You know, why are you taking this guy? And they'll... all this comes to light this morning, and it makes the Patriots look embarrassing. We're now in a couple of that, you know, hours, you're going to have all these guys smiling who took Aaron Hernandez, acting like it's the greatest day on earth at the White House the same day Aaron Hernandez commits suicide. And maybe that's in the back of Tom Brady's head.
You know, if Tom Brady does this out of that, I actually gain a lot of respect for him, because I think it's really easy when it's Belichick and Kraft to just smile and go along with it, because those guys are the power brokers, and those guys obviously have created a culture of winning and winning and winning some more. So to go against the Kings, nobody can do that over there, or else you'll get shipped out. So I would actually have a lot of respect for Brady if he did see the writing on the wall with Hernandez and had some type of ethical conundrum about all this, but I doubt it. I think whether Hernandez was found dead today or not, I think that if he's not going to the White House, and he went to the four previous White Houses and has been connected to as being a Trump supporter, or at least a Trump friend, then this is just him wanting to stay out of that really hot boiling pot right now of politics. Jeff is next up in Virginia, listening on CBS Sports Radio's 101.7. What's going on, Jeff?
Hey, guys. Like the show. Yeah, it's, you guys are making some good points about the Pats and how they're trying to distance themselves from the Hernandez thing. But, you know, I would only say that the Pats and a lot of teams have a risk and reward thing that they have to do with players. And for the first couple of years of Hernandez, if he'd straightened himself out, we would be talking about what a value that he was in the fourth round. And it's really no different than teams are facing with Joe Mixon. If Mixon has an off-field incident 3 months from now, we're going to be killing that team. But then if he works out as a good citizen, we're going to be patting that team on the back. So I do think it's difficult to, you know, get the players in the right round. And of course, nobody ever thought that Hernandez would turn into a psychopath. So I'm not a Pats fan at all. I don't like them at all. But I do think, you know, they should never be saying he's a good guy. But I do think it's underrated or difficult to gauge how these players that have had issues are going to do in the pros, just like we're going to see with Mixon, with where he goes. So
I think that's
all I got. Love the show. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Good phone call. I think there's a lot of fair points that you bring up there, but let's unpack that a little bit. Let's say there's no way, let's take what you said, there's no way to have known that Aaron Hernandez was going to turn into a psychopath. He had a lot of markings that would say he would, that he was a dangerous guy. I mean, again, flipped off the handle in Gainesville, when he was drunk and escorted out of a bar to come back and punch the guy in the head. Okay, bar fights happen. That's not really a bar fight, but okay, he's prone to violence in that incident. But plenty of guys are. He was also connected to a shooting in a car at a stoplight. Okay, that's not what Joe Mixon's connected to. And I'm not lessening domestic violence, but domestic violence versus taking a gun and shooting up a car at a stoplight with three people in it is a little different. And Aaron Hernandez, by all accounts, was connected to gangs back in his hometown, back in Connecticut, when he was recruited. So you had years of knowledge on the interior of him connected with killers. So I don't think it's fair to color this as, well, how could we have ever known about Aaron Hernandez? He had markings. That was why he dropped to the fourth round. Again, do NFL scouts go, well, you know, I wouldn't take him because I think in 3 years he's going to end up killing two people? No. What I do think is they go, how do we handle this? How does he handle celebrity? How does he handle money? And if he's got these ties to his background and his hometown and his friends that will drag him down, will he ever get production out of it? I mean, that's, let's face it. At some point in time, when you're assessing this, it's not about the moral fiber of a guy as much as it is, will it affect my investment in him? But Aaron Hernandez had markings all along of not being able to handle this because he had the trappings of gangs, connections, violence, shootings. But I do agree with you, Jeff, that there's a risk-reward value board and that if Aaron Hernandez was passed over by 31 teams for four rounds or 32 teams for three rounds and then the Patriots in the fourth round take him, had he been there in the seventh round, somebody's going to take him anyway. It wasn't just going to be the Patriots, the only team that's involved in him. There absolutely is always a risk-reward. But I just think that when you do it, then you can't throw up your hands and go, I can't believe what happened. That's the part that bothers me the most. The Patriots have built one of the great winning franchises in any sports history. And the Patriots, Bill Belichick's brilliance is beyond compare to me, football-wise. Belichick's ability, you give him your roster and you take his, he'll still beat you. It's not about having the best roster. It's about his coaching acumen. And granted, Tom Brady's a big part of this. But he won with Matt Castle. He'll win after Tom Brady retires. You watch. They'll win divisions. They'll win 11 games. It'll keep on trucking. I mean, he freaking won a nationally televised game with Jacoby Brissett under center. The guy can't throw 6 yards. So they have done everything right. And their success, to me, is above reproach. And I know that they've had the scandals or whatever, but their winning culture and their success is unmatched because their dynasty is now 15 years long, whereas everybody else's NFL dynasty is 10 or less. But don't draft Aaron Hernandez. Don't draft a guy that has all of these trappings, all of these markings, all of this baggage, and then when he finally does something, go, boy, what a tragedy. No, even before he killed himself, it was, boy, what just... such a nightmare what happened to Aaron Hernandez. I mean, we could have just never seen that coming. I mean, he just seemed like such a good guy. You know, that just to me seems disingenuous. So let me stand corrected. Brady actually missed the last White House, huh?
In 2015, he skipped the White House.
Okay. So did he give any reason then? Was it also family issue? Maybe he just doesn't. That's weird, though, because he seems to have dipped at least some toe into the political water by having the Make America Great Again hat in his locker and being kind of, he has defended Trump when asked directly about it at times. That's weird.
I now remember doing the story. The Patriots released a statement saying he had a prior family commitment that he couldn't get out of, but within 24 hours he was spotted in Manhattan at an Apple store getting a new Apple Watch.
So was that one tied into the Deflategate maybe, that he didn't want to... because that was when Deflategate was still going on.
That would have been before it really hit the courts at that point.
Yeah.
So this would have been April of 2 years ago, yeah.
Interesting. So he did it three times. It was like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to go to the White House anymore. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. You know, maybe who knows what his political leanings are, but maybe he didn't like that administration, so he didn't go then, and now doesn't feel like he can go without being yanked into political turmoil. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it seems very coincidental that he just happens to have a family issue today and can't go to the White House. You know, he's got teammates that are not going out of political principle. Maybe part of this is not choosing a side within his locker room. I don't know. So the Marlins last night had a chance at a no-hitter, or at least had a no-hitter late into the game. And you had Wei Yin Chen starting the game and throwing 100 pitches and going through six innings, or through seven innings. He allowed two walks and one hit through seven. He hit 100 pitches with a no-hitter, and Don Mattingly yanked him with just six outs to go. Mattingly explained the decision.
At that point, it really wasn't that hard of a decision. You know, I would love to see him throw a no-no. If he's at 70 going into the eighth, or, you know, he's a pitch, you know, or a range that's closer, then I'm going to give him a shot at it, but not when he's there, and I can't do that to him, and I can't really do it to our club.
So part of this I understand, because Wei Yin Chen was injured last year, and Mattingly said, he's been healthy, but I'm not going to go let him throw 130 pitches, which he was at 100 through seven. So you're talking about trying to get six more outs. It could hit 130. And so maybe that's a number that you're just not willing to go to with him coming off injury. Maybe you're not willing to go to with anybody. The Marlins have not had a complete game since 2014. 441 games, they have not had a complete game. Part of this I understand in terms of protecting investments. Part of this I hate. And as a baseball fan, and growing up as a baseball fan, the no-hitter has such a magical connotation that I hate it that we're at a point in time where it's like every time a no-hitter goes into the eighth inning or even the seventh inning, it's pitch count watch, and will he get yanked? Will he get yanked? You know, 30 years ago, it wasn't will he get yanked. It is he's got a no-hitter. You can't pull him out. There's no way. It goes against everything. I'm not saying every piece of baseball philosophy from 30 years ago is better, but this does bother me. It annoys me because these are iconic, historic moments, and there is no evidence that if you do this, Wei Yin Chen is any better served not getting injured again. It might seem like it. Well, you don't want to overtax his arm. He's coming off of an injury. There's more risk there. But if you ever read Jeff Passan's book entitled The Arm, it's a fascinating look at there is no science yet to say one way or the other. You've got guys out there pitching in the minors and the majors, and you can just workhorse them to death. You've got guys in Japan, you can workhorse to death. You've got guys in the Caribbean, you can workhorse to death. And they'll never blow out their arm. 100, 130, they come back off of an injury, and they're still fine. They get even better, all of this. And then there are some guys where you throw them 50 pitches, they tear their ACL, or they tear their shoulder. You throw them 30 pitches, the UCL goes. You know, that there's just no rhyme or reason that some guys are predestined to be injury prone. Some guys and their tendons don't have what it take to pitch in the major leagues. Some guys do, and you just never know because you can't strengthen those ligaments. It's just one of these, it's a bingo board. So it annoys me that we've come to a point in time in Major League Baseball where the doctrine is better safe than sorry. Too much money invested, you can't risk it. Don't risk it. Don't ever risk it. When there's no evidence that Wei Yin Chen couldn't have blown right through, had a moment in history, had the greatest point in his career, been remembered forever, and would be any less effective than having yanked him after seven innings last night. You know, it's like now we're just managing out of fear all of the time when there is no hard scientific evidence that managing out of caution and fear is any more appropriate than managing out of just going out there and being aggressive. Now, John Smoltz says 20 years ago, I'm pitching through that no-hitter. Of course I'm pitching through that no-hitter. And we never even think about it. John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, they never thought about, oh my God, what happens if my ligament blows up or I've got inflammation here? They just pitched through it. And they had Hall of Fame careers that weren't marked by constant injury. When we return, one Celtics player suggests that the Bulls think they've quit. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.